Our lecturer is Robert H. Mitchell of Edinburgh, Scotland. He is now an experienced practitioner and teacher, and also a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship. Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dunaway, for that fine introduction. Good evening. It's a great pleasure being with you this evening. My wife and I are delighted to be visiting Palo Alto and very happy indeed to be able to visit this world-famous campus. And it's a great pleasure for me to be lecturing in this beautiful church, the Stanford Memorial Church. One of the advantages of traveling around as we do is that we have this grand opportunity of visiting world-famous spots, world-famous buildings. I'd like to share with you an incident that happened on our way here. My wife and I were flying out from London to Boston very recently. And an unusual situation arose. The pilot announced that the plane we were flying on had two sets of navigational aids, radio and radar, and both had failed to operate. He announced that he'd have to decide whether to return to London or whether to rely on his compass and fly north, keeping the coastline in sight where possible. He decided, because the visibility was so good, he decided to continue the flight, making the detour via Greenland. After a longer journey than usual, we arrived safely in the United States. In the weeks following this incident, I pondered the pilot's decision and his trust in his ability to handle this situation. And inevitably, I found myself seeking a deeper understanding of my own navigational aid. I'm sure we're all very much aware of the great numbers of people in all age groups who seem to have lost their way in life. In my travels, I find many people drifting from one location to another in search of happiness and satisfaction. We go from one job to another, finding only frustration, discouragement, and a sense of hopelessness. Many of them seem to be running away from an unhappy relationship problem, some business situation, or a sense of social injustice. In a number of cases, it seems to me, they're really running away from themselves. Too many face with the stress of decision-making. The temptation is to try to escape, to cop up. Where can we turn for guidance in our everyday affairs when life seems difficult and confused? Let me answer that question by asking another. Have you ever studied a good chart of navigable rivers and coastal waters? They give deep water readings and safe channels. But rocks and dangerous currents are clearly marked as well. Hazard, we must avoid. A good chart gives the whole picture. When you plan a long motor trip, you naturally turn to an up-to-date map of the area you're going to cover. Here again, we find not only the freeways indicated, but also the congested roads through business districts that would tend to slow us up. In the same way, we all need guidelines in our home, in the college campus, in our social and business pursuits. We all need a clear sense of where we're going, a basis for making the choices we face every day, a basis we can have confidence in. Do you recall how Jesus, when faced with difficulties of every kind, confidently declared, "I know whence I came and whither I go"? Is there any way we can gain something of this same confidence? Yes, there is. And an understanding of our relationship to God is the key. Let me illustrate. A young mother, a friend of mine, found herself overwhelmed by world conditions and the complexity of modern living. As a result of her anxiety for the future of her three sons, she experienced a severe nervous breakdown. Medication didn't help. Neither did the services of psychiatrists. When the situation seemed hopeless, she asked for treatment in Christian Science. I visited her several times, each time assuring her of God's love for her and for her family. But there was no response. Her husband had told me of the depression and fear that had preceded the final breakdown. He also told me that he'd thought of changing their vacation plans. As a family, we were all keen sailors and had bought a small cabin cruiser, planning to spend some weeks at sea. This snippet of information touched off a new line of approach in my thought. I explained to the mother that the cabin cruiser they'd recently bought was lying at anchor, being tossed to and fro by the tides, that it would continue to do so until someone came to the decision to steer it out of harbor into the open sea. I pointed out that a clear decision had to be made, that whether it be a small cruiser or the largest, best-equipped ocean liner, it was entirely under the control of the one in command. Pursuing this idea for a time, I came back every now and then to equate the situation of the cabin cruiser riding at anchor with that of the young woman wallowing in the mire of self-reproach, inertia, and disinterest in her family. I reminded her that she had a decision to make. Quite suddenly, she began to respond. Very soon, she was caring for her family and tending her household. In a short time, she was completely healed, and they were all enjoying their holiday at sea as planned. I mentioned that this young woman had a decision to make. What was it? It wasn't medical. It wasn't psychiatric. It was spiritual. She needed to turn to God for spiritual awakening, to realize her status as the child of God and what that really meant. Turning prayerfully to God and drawing on the truths of the Bible, I was able to assure her of God's presence as ministering divine love, constantly caring for her and for her family. I was able to assure her that she was never alone, never abandoned to solve life's problems on her own, but forever upheld by ever-present love. I was able to point out that God, the one divine intelligence, was forever imparting wisdom and confidence to each of his children. That this divine love was forever at hand, directing and guiding her thought. This, then, was her decision: to acknowledge these truths and accept them as operating in her experience. Her firm commitment to this decision so uplifted her thought that all sense of burden and responsibility for her family vanished. She saw more clearly than ever before that she could rely wholeheartedly on divine mind's ability to direct and guide the thought of her three sons and channel their talent into satisfying careers. This glimpse of God as the one infinite mind the supreme intelligence of the universe, revealed to her something of the vast opportunity at hand. Her sense of limitation began to recede before her recognition of the infinite possibilities available to man. To her, as the image and likeness of God. She saw that she had to accept her spiritual unity with God, as had the great Bible figures, including Jesus. You remember, he said, "I and my Father are one." As this new concept of a oneness with God developed in thought, she began to identify herself as a child of ever-present divine love, constantly caring for her and for her family. She saw that all good was available to her that very moment, but she had to claim it as the primal law of her life. As her fear and doubt gave way to a growing understanding of her unity with God, her body was steered into health. In the way that a captain takes control of his ship, so she found that using the Bible tool as a chart, she could take control of her feet and order her life harmoniously and her mind's unerring direction. This is why many find the Bible so important. The Bible provides the basis for confident decision-making. Christian Science recognizes it. In fact, its very first tenet reads, "As adherents of truth, we take the inspired word of the Bible as our sufficient guide to eternal life." This is one of six tenets to be found in Science and Health, Receipt of the Scriptures, by the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy. Our young mother's experience teaches us a very important point about gaining a right sense of direction. Many of us have a deep-seated trust that everything will turn out all right in the end. And of course, we've all come across the confirmed pessimist who feels that he's being dumbed down in everything he attempts. But to steer a happy, purposeful way of life, it's essential that we lift thought above the merely human sense of good and base our thinking on a spiritual foundation. To establish this foundation, this correct basis of thought, we need to acknowledge and accept one guiding instinct. We traditionally call it God. When we acknowledge the supremacy of God as the only mind, and that man has no other mind, we begin to experience the presence of God by way of the spiritual qualities and activities which we accept. Ignorance of the supremacy of God and of the availability of his qualities limits human experience. Resistance to his supremacy argues on the side of materiality and of continued bondage to material conditions. On the other hand, acceptance of his supremacy enables us to identify ourselves with God's infinite spiritual resources, with a wisdom that promotes freedom with ever-widening horizons. Then in place of doubt and fear, we gain a confidence and assurance that helps us steer an even course in life. Our response to God's prompting does away with the apathy so prevalent in human thought.
and helps us range our thinking on the side of renewed hope. Then in place of doubt and fear, we grow in confidence, in a spiritual conviction that life really worth living. This in turn highlights the beauty and harmony of God's creation and the joy of expressing it. Health appears in place of suffering, order in place of discord, and good relationships with others in place of dissension and change. Then we want to change the direction of a boat.
We don't do anything to the front of it.
We simply move the rudder. We only want to change the course of our lives, as that young mother did. Our first need is to change our thinking, to align with the divine mind and divine love, to accept our spiritual unity with God. Then our experience is. A spirit demon is as much at home with certain lights and bodies as we are with familiar landmarks in our own hometown. Even darkness makes very little difference to the experienced shipper. He has made a thorough study of the chart. The Bible uses the word light as a pervading metaphor for the clarity and wisdom that guide men in dark and difficult moments. We too can gain something of this guidance as we study what the Bible has to say about this light and its source. From her study of the Bible and the perception of Christian living, Mrs. Eddy recognized that the greatest source of guidance is the light of divine love, the love that is God. She writes in Science and Health, love inspires, illumines, designates, and leads to God. The effectiveness of this life was consistently proved by Jesus. Confronted with every form of obstruction and evil, he demonstrated the power of divine love to heal, to restore, and to point the forward way. Jesus had a clear sense of mission. It evolved from his spiritual understanding of his sonship with God. This true spiritual idea of God and man and their relationship to each other, we recognize to be the Christ, not a physical person, but the truth of God and man. Jesus' thought was so much in line with this truth as the one guiding force in his life that he could turn to it spontaneously, for right direction, in meeting every situation. A familiar incident shows how his proof of this true relationship of God and man became a light to his followers also. After the crucifixion, the disciples didn't at first grasp the spiritual significance of what was happening. They returned to their daily task. Thinking they had lost the Master, they succumbed to discouragement. 3 days later, two of them made their way to Emmaus, a village a few miles from Jerusalem. While they discussed the events of the previous day, Jesus joined them, but they didn't recognize him. Sensing their discouragement and confusion, he rebuked them for disbelieving Bible prophecy. Luke writes of this encounter, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. Instead of trying to gain prestige as a personal leader, Jesus preferred the disciples
back to the scriptures, to a new spiritual reading of the familiar passages. Later that day, as we gathered for a meal, he lovingly pointed out the spiritual significance of the crucifixion and the resurrection, and the practical effectiveness for inspiring and guiding mankind. Should we feel overwhelmed by the darkness of materialism, the arguments of evil, illness, the futility of human experience, each one of us can take that walk to Emmaus, communing with the ever-present Christ. The understanding of our spiritual sonship with divine love, then we too can reach the point of enlightenment the two disciples did when they could proclaim to their colleagues, "The Lord is risen indeed." This new awareness of the Christ, the inspiration of our unity with God, will help us maximize the good in human consciousness, while we minimize and silence evil's claim to power or reality. In explanation of his healing power, Jesus said simply, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." Here we see something of the dynamic humility, the power and love which so characterized Jesus' life. He certainly allowed divine love to inspire, illumine, designate, and take the lead in his life. So can we. This is what heals. I'm often asked by newcomers to Christian Science, just how exactly does your religion heal disease? It's the Christ in us, the reflection of spirit in human consciousness that heals. As we reflect the Christ in consciousness, we are individualizing omnipresent life and love. This brings about healing. Mrs. Eddy has devoted an entire chapter on this subject in her textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. This chapter is entitled Christian Science Practice. Basically, she writes that we are never attempting to change people, heal material conditions, or alter physical structure. What is demanded of us is that we change our mental concept regarding persons, material conditions, and physical structures. The more we understand the true selfhood of man to be that which individualizes omnipresent life, the more effective our prayers, and the quicker the results. No claim of sickness, pain or fear can possibly exist in the consciousness filled with omnipresent life and love. In the active presence of the Christ, truth, nothing harmful or destructive to man's well-being can possibly exist. Therefore, healing is assured. Let me give you an example. The case was that of a young child, only 10 weeks old. She had been born deformed in one leg from the hip down. The surgeon on the case told the parents that she would never walk normally, that although they might be able to ease the situation in later life, this child would always be crippled. At this point, the grandmother of the child, who was a student of Christian Science, asked the parents if they would allow her to invite a Christian Science practitioner to take the case. The parents agreed. In comforting the grandmother and assuring her of the power of God to meet this situation, the practitioner gave her this statement from Science and Health. Love never loses sight of loveliness. Its halo rests upon its object. He explained that the child was really God's perfect expression and must therefore be normal and active in every respect, that she was forever under his loving care. The practitioner prayed along these lines until he gained a sense of peace about the case. The following morning, the grandmother telephoned the practitioner with joy to say that the child had been completely healed and was perfectly free. The leg had resumed its normal condition. The baby was fit and well. Within a few days, the surgeon who had been on the case visited the family and examined the child. He claimed he had seen a miracle, but the grandmother knew that this was another proof of the power of divine love, breaking the illusion of material sense and restoring normality. I have since learned from the family this little girl is now taking ballet lessons. So this illustrates the completeness and the permanency of this healing. As in the past, so today, Jesus is still the way-shower for all mankind. His teaching of man's spiritual unity with the Father is no dry creed or dogma, but a demonstrable fact. The Christ truth is the vitalizing force in the experience of each one of us who responds to its presence and power. It's the power of God in human consciousness, available in all circumstances, in every situation. It provides the lights and voids that keep us on our course. When the currents of human nature rush in against the right course, it's the Christ or truth of being. When the currents of human nature rush in against the right course, it's the Christ or truth of being in thought that establishes order and designates which steps to take, which course to pursue. The Christ brings to thought the tangible presence of God as love. That love which gives meaning to existence, purpose to human effort. Love that lifts the burden of despair and guilt. Love that banishes apathy and indifference. Love that promotes self-respect, that nourishes the affections, that strengthens every right endeavor. As the Christ inspires and clarifies human consciousness, it has a natural and direct effect in our experience. As we have just seen in the experience of the grandmother, Christian scientists find this borne out in their lives. The light of the Christ dispels all mystery and helps us demonstrate practical Christianity, uplifting and clarifying the entire range of our thought and guiding our actions, bringing healing to every dark corner of our lives. Jesus once said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." When we think of healing in Christian Science, we think of it in terms of freedom and liberation. And in this sense, it embraces and gives direction to every aspect of human life. In these times, when we're witnessing tremendous advances in technological progress,
new ventures in commerce and industry. It's essential that we see the truth of God as divine love and as the one unerring mind. This truth illumines the business world as it can one's personal experience. What greater need is there in the business world than the need for deep spiritual perception? Thought attuned to the kingdom of God and his righteousness is better able to promote righteous transactions that will bless the community and nation. It's spiritual insight and integrity that help us detect and avoid those ventures based on selfish bargaining or sheer speculation or maneuvered from personal motives. The spiritual activity of the Christ truth goes on perpetually in human consciousness. Our recognition and acknowledgement of this fact brings clarification and enlightenment to thought, actuating progress. It rends the mist of confusion and self-doubt and replaces them with order and conviction and a spiritual adequacy hitherto unknown. It enlarges our capacity to grasp and interpret this truth in practical terms. It leads thought into fresh paths of discernment and action. This was proved most conclusively in the experience of a friend of mine. She had considerable holdings in a large business that had begun to deteriorate. Instead of making a profit each year, substantial losses were accumulating, adding large sums to an overdraft at the bank. Naturally, there were no dividends. Her lawyers advised my friend of the serious position and told her that the bank had every right to withdraw its support. She proceeded to take the practical steps and discuss the entire situation with her bank manager and with her accountant. Both confirmed the lawyer's assessment that there was no hope for the business. She then wrote to the chairman of the directors of the company, who assured her they'd done all they could. She suddenly rose in revolt at the negative attitude adopted by each person in turn. She saw that she was allowing herself to be mesmerized by material evidence, by negative thinking and human conclusions. She saw that she had to turn to divine mind for guidance. She began to study the Bible and science and health for light on this situation and found this statement from science and health particularly helpful. The rule of inversion infers from error its opposite, truth. But truth is the light which dispels error. She saw clearly that whatever the material evidence in the case, she was never obliged to accept this evidence as factual in any way. She saw that because the business had been based on a high sense of service to the community, it represented the appearing in human experience of an idea of God, divine mind. Therefore, it could never be curtailed, could never be impeded or insecure in any way. She tried to see everyone in the business as the individual expression of God, manifesting the intelligence and alertness of divine mind. She saw, too, that she could never be separated from what was rightly hers. This attitude brought her a great sense of peace, and considerable progress began to be made in the business. Some months later, she had a letter from her lawyers recommending the acceptance of an offer for the business as a going concern. When this was agreed upon and the transaction completed, her bank manager said to her, "I can't thank you enough for discussing this matter with me. As a banker, I've not allowed anything but facts and figures to influence the decisions I make. But by the evidence you've placed before me, you've given visible proof that there's a higher power than mere facts and figures." Here we see conclusively that spiritually motivated thinking can set at naught limitations imposed by fearful human concepts. It can bring into focus the God-inspired ideas always available to you and me. It enables us to discern the right action and directs our thought in resolving difficult problems. Whether you're a business executive, a director, employee, or shareholder, living consistently with spiritual illumination will assure success for all concerned, and better service to your clients and community. As we've just seen, spiritually motivated thinking enables us to lift the entire basis of business, the entire concept of business, onto a new foundation, that of the divine mind, individualized by man, and meeting the human need. Spiritually inspired thinking banishes the claim of mounting pressures, the risk of chance and speculation, and enables us to prove that God is relevant in business, as in every other sphere of experience. The genuine mind we call God perpetuates right attitudes, decisiveness, and confidence in man, his expression. These qualities we see manifested as integrity of purpose, wisdom, honesty, spiritual perception, maturity of judgment, all of which underlie sound business dealings. Responding to these right ideas brings a wider scope, overcoming limitations and restrictions imposed by mortal concepts. The Christ truth does indeed make free. Throughout history, God has made his purposes clear to those in need. Through outstanding instances of spiritual guidance, he has stimulated world progress. Such an event took place with the discovery of Christian Science. After years of prayer and searching the Bible, Mary Baker Eddy was led to glimpse that all true existence is spiritual, never material, and that God, Spirit, is the only reality. Healed and strengthened by this revelation, she devoted her life to gaining an ever clearer sense of spiritual reality and the demonstration of spiritual law as governing the human scene. She founded the Church of Christ Scientist to protect and promote her discovery and to help others along this spiritual pathway. In her desire to help mankind, Mrs. Eddy was led to see that there are no exceptions to the infinite allness of spirit, that there are no exceptions to man as being God's wholly spiritual expression. In fact, she saw for the first time that man, that is you and me and all men in reality, embody God-like qualities alone. And this means regardless of our human appearance, nationality, sex, or race. She saw that man is comprised only of that which is good, spiritual, permanent, and eternal. As the result of her work, the study of Christian Science is turning thought away from matter to spirit, God, as the only reality. It's awakening individual consciousness around the world to recognize the fact that health and well-being of every kind are spiritual and already established, only waiting to be demonstrated. Putting this revelation into practice, Mrs. Eddy became the first Christian Science practitioner, taking many kinds of cases and restoring them to health and usefulness. Once, for instance, when she was staying with a friend in Chelsea, a suburb of Boston, a crippled man came to the friend's door. Mrs. Eddy saw him and gave him something. Hobbling to the next house, he asked to lie down. In about an hour, he found his arms and legs were loosed. He could stand erect. He could walk. He was well. And he attributed his healing to Mrs. Eddy, for whom he inquired without knowing her name. Later, some of Mrs. Eddy's students asked her how she had healed this man. She replied, "When I looked on that man, my heart gushed with unspeakable pity and prayer." In this incident, we have an example of the method of Christ healing and its powerful effect. Mrs. Eddy's vision revealed what was actually present in that man. Not a crippled mortal who needed to be healed, but man, made in the image and likeness of God, wholly spiritual, upright, and free. From the time Mrs. Eddy discovered Christian Science, she developed the most extraordinary capacity for sustained effort in shaping the course of the Christian Science movement. With no precedent to follow, no works to refer to except the Bible, she turned wholeheartedly to God for guidance in all that she did. He never failed her. When every human obstacle seemed to obstruct her path, divine inspiration impelled her progress. As the founder of a worldwide movement, Mrs. Eddy had to establish a system of government aimed at keeping her church progressive. Step by step, this was achieved. But she knew that spiritual vision required for this task was derived from humility, and that in order to qualify as a leader of mankind, she must first qualify as a follower of God. This quality of humility, of listening to God for guidance and direction, will lead each one of us out of any adversity, no matter how difficult. When we give the Christ truth a foothold in the doorway of our thinking, it expands until it opens wide our consciousness to spiritual being and its practical possibilities. It breaks down all barriers of fear and doubt, of social or economic background, of human origins, of history. It banishes exclusive, restrictive thinking and points the way to acknowledgement of spiritual perfection as the present reality. Our willingness to relinquish human theories determines our course. As we humbly and obediently let this mind be in us, which was also in Christ Jesus, as Paul reminds us, we are prepared to open thought to the liberating Christ in every area of our experience. Mrs. Eddy puts it in these words from Miscellaneous Writings. Self-renunciation of all that constitutes a so-called material man and the acknowledgement and achievement of his spiritual identity as the child of God is science that opens the very floodgates of heaven, whence good flows into every avenue of being. This renunciation of matter and acknowledgement of spiritual reality is prayer as understood in Christian Science, scientific healing prayer. As we begin to understand the power of this scientific prayer for good, we find it is effective even in what are considered the most hopeless situations. This was illustrated in the experience of my father-in-law. After a very active life as a pilot in the First World War and as a naval captain for many years, he became very ill with tuberculosis. He had undergone considerable periods of medical treatment when the family first heard of Christian Science. He was encouraged to look into the teachings, but firmly stood his ground, feeling that religion was for women, it wasn't for men. At least it wasn't for him. He believed in God, but that was as far as he was prepared to go. The physical condition was becoming very serious, and my mother-in-law went to a Christian Science reading room seeking prayerful guidance about what she could do in this situation. As she read through testimonies of healing in Christian Science periodicals published many years earlier, she came across this testimony, which immediately arrested her attention. It was written by a navigator in the First World War whose plane was attacked while on a flying mission over enemy territory, and the oil feed pipe on the outside of the plane was badly damaged. The navigator wrote that as a student of Christian Science, he prayed. Then he climbed out onto the wing and held the oil pipe together. Although still in danger from enemy aircraft, he and his pilot were unharmed and made the return trip back over the English Channel and landed safely in Britain. My mother-in-law felt that this testimony was just the one for her husband, so she took it home. She asked him to read it, and he said he would. Just this one testimony. After reading it, he looked at his wife and said, "You know, this is the most extraordinary thing. I was the pilot of that plane, and that man was my navigator. I never knew he was a Christian Scientist, but I remember the situation very well." This convincing account of God's direction and loving care was just what my father-in-law needed to wake him up to some extent spiritually. He began studying Christian Science. But it wasn't until his physical condition became very critical and he was given only the weekend to live that he turned to Christian Science for healing. At this point, a practitioner was engaged, and within 48 hours of asking for treatment, he was completely healed. When thought is directed into spiritual channels and finds cooperation from the individual, then wonderful things begin to take place. when the harmony and peace of divine love displace fear and confusion in human thought, this God progressively vanishes from our experience. When we're alert and obedient in channeling our thought spiritually, there's no limit to its effectiveness. The healing and freedom we can enjoy as a result indicates the tremendous power there is in spiritualized thinking. Thought based on an understanding of our relationship to God, Spirit. With what security, then, we can go about our daily tasks, knowing that within our own consciousness, we can lay hold of the spiritual truth of all beings. This Christ idea guides thought from the material to the spiritual, from the earthbound to the inspirational. Those who've been uplifted, healed, and regenerated from any form of adversity through the influence of Christ truth recognize that scientific Christianity isn't just another religious viewpoint. It illumines with deeper meaning the wisdom of the prophets and thinkers. It carries to logical completion the work they began. Above all, it points to the timeless relevance of Jesus' mission and its practical effectiveness for each one of us today. Thank you.
You've just heard a taped Christian Science lecture by Robert Mitchell entitled, Let God Direct Your Life, KBRG San Francisco.